Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how are we doing this week? Are you ready for some postseason football?
Well, we got a gap here, right? So this is more about reacting to Oregon. But Penn State has 2 weeks to prepare for SMU. Hey, look, the game was what it was, but my opinion of Penn State still has not changed. And based on this path, they can absolutely get to the college football national championship.
They really can. And we're going to get to the seedings and where everybody is. But my first thought on that, Zach, is it's amazing to me how many people are like shocked and stunned with how this works out for the number 5 and 6 seeds, something we've been talking about for a year.
Well, I am glad that the committee is just valuing body of work and schedule of work. It's eventually a 3-loss team will get in. I think the circumstances will have to be slightly different here. But I'm glad that Penn State gets rewarded for going 11-1. Everybody wants to say that, oh, USC is not good, West Virginia is not good, Minnesota is not good. These are Power 4 conference teams. And the committee looks at that. What is the difference? Because Alabama lost to those teams. Ole Miss lost to those teams. Notre Dame lost to a team that is worse than that. But Penn State beat everybody except a top 3 Ohio State team at the time and the number 1 team in the country on a neutral site. You cannot demonize Penn State beyond that. So the ranking is appropriate. I don't agree necessarily with the format. I don't like that conference champions automatically get a bye, but that is the value in the conference championship. If you win, you are more likely to get a bye and get into the quarterfinal of the playoffs. So that's the give and take. That's the trade-off here of winning your college conference championship. But I'm glad you don't get wholly penalized if you happen to lose. And Penn State, it was a close game. It was a 1-score game, and Penn State was never out of it. It's not like Penn State lost by 3 or 4 touchdowns. They were down by that, but I think what impresses me more is that they came back from that and made that a game. And, you know, refs, I don't want to say that the refs did not help Penn State, but you, 1 or 2 mistakes that Penn State does not make, and they win that game. It really came down to 1 or 2 mistakes that Penn State could have fixed or could not have made, and they would have beaten the number 1 team and have been the number 1 team in the country with a bye week. But honestly, some people might be happier with the fact that they didn't beat Oregon. They get an easier path through the playoff.
Well, what I like about it is a home playoff game.
Exactly.
Which is attractive to the Penn State fan base. Well, let's talk about the game a little bit before we get back and talk about the playoffs. And in this game, it was fascinating to me. I had someone react to me with, oh my goodness, that Oregon offense, they shredded Penn State's defense. Now, my take is not a great performance by the Penn State defense, but if you go and look at the details a little bit further, Penn State led Oregon in total offense. Penn State gained more yards. I'm wondering if Oregon fans right now are saying, uh-oh, boy, that Penn State offense shredded our defense. I'm worried about it.
Possibly. Oregon's defense is certainly respectable. I would argue that they are a top 10 defense in terms of talent. Penn State also playing from behind, right? There's a lot of things that factor into it. So Penn State was playing from behind, so they had to go up-tempo. They had to push the ball. Oregon also got a short field on that Drew Aller turnover and punched it in from the 1-yard line. So it's not like Drew threw an interception in that red zone, and then Oregon drove down the field. So that you take away 80, 90 yards, right? So I don't look at the total yardage and say that, oh, Penn State, Oregon should be ultimately concerned. Oregon still has the better offense. They scored more points than Penn State. But Penn State has a top 10 offense. They clearly showed that. All of Penn State, and Jim, I've tried to make that clear on the show that if there's anything that Penn State has to worry about, it is its defense down the stretch. Penn State's offense is not the issue.
Well, let's talk about that defense a little bit. Now, a lot of credit to Oregon. They've got a lot of weapons. They're really fast with their wide receivers, a very, very good quarterback with a quick release. But there were some concerning things about that Penn State defense. Receivers running free. I was a little bit concerned about the tackling also. What did you see from Penn State's defense that concerned you?
Sometimes it's just a talent issue. I think that Tom Allen could have made better changes and changes that happened sooner. For example, AJ Harris was on Tez Johnson. I counted two tangible times. Maybe I missed it and he was on him a third or a fourth time. But that should have been changed in the second half. Best on best, great on great, elite on elite. There is no reason when it's not where you have a full season of work anymore that, okay, we need to perfect this or we can't do that or it's okay if we stick to our original game plan here. Andy Kotelnicki didn't have to make any changes. Tom Allen needed to make that change. And he didn't until it was ultimately too late. But it worked two out of two times. He got creative with AJ Harris, dropped him into the middle of the zone, almost in the middle of the field in zone, almost as a quarterback spy, if you will. Because that's where Oregon kept going. Oregon kept going over the middle of the field to Tez Johnson or the tight ends. And it worked. And the second he moved AJ Harris over there, Dillon Gabriel hesitated. And that was enough for either the pass rush to get pressure or the secondary to continue in coverage. That second forced Oregon into an uncomfortable situation, and it led to one punt. Then, in man coverage, AJ Harris followed Tez Johnson all around the formation. Oregon's like, okay, you're in man coverage. We at least know this. It still didn't work. AJ Harris covered Tez Johnson long enough. Dillon Gabriel didn't even look his way. Didn't even look that way because he knew AJ Harris was over there, went to his other receiver, bad throw, punt. Why did that not happen sooner? Why did that not happen more frequently? AJ Harris played the best game out of anybody, and if they were going to win that game against Oregon, AJ Harris was the key. And I don't know why twice. I don't know why they ran that twice when that should have been the game plan the entire second half, and do it because a one seed is on the line. A bye week is on the line. Penn State lucks out in the fact that they have an easy path, a home game. Look, it's an easy path. It's the easiest. SMU, Boise State, and then you're going to get a banged up batter, Georgia, Notre Dame, or Indiana. Penn State would honestly be the favorite against any of those three. A small favorite, 1 to 2, 3 points. But that's the fact of the matter is that Penn State So they get lucky for losing the Big Ten championship game. But it was just one subtle change that would have had Penn State being the number one seed, had Tom Allen moved AJ Harris and had him shadow Tez Johnson. That was it. Tez Johnson beat Penn State.
He was exceptional, had a big game. Let's talk the other side of the ball with Penn State on offense. We had been wondering what happened to the running game for several weeks. I think the running backs were banged up a bit, specifically Nick Singleton. They were running amok over that Oregon defense. And I think, Zach, what gets forgotten is the play of the offensive line in making that happen. Was that as good a performance as we've seen all year from this offensive line?
It was incredible. 10 out of 10. Made me eat my words about my criticisms, my fear, if you will, for a lack of the better term at this time, that Penn State's offensive line would cost them games down the stretch because they look average. They look mediocre all season against tougher competition. They struggled because they had not been tested. They struggled against competition that was middle of the road, or it was, they didn't really dominate, but they did. So they didn't impress me. They didn't dominate against weaker competition. And then they struggled against Ohio State, which arguably has a top five defensive line in the entire country. Oregon is one of those other defensive lines. Derek Harmon in the middle, Uiagalelei against, and Penn State's offensive line is not at its strongest. Anthony Danko is better than Nolan Rucci. Nolan Rucci came to play ball. Nolan Rucci anchored that right side. Sure, Drew Aller was under pressure and under duress at period. That's Oregon being a top 10, top 5 defensive line. But Penn State's offensive line, with Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen going both for 100 yards in the game, averaging almost, both of them almost averaging 10 yards a pop. Drew Aller getting time, the wide receivers. The offensive line is the key. Notice what happens when Drew Allard gets time to go through his progressions, where there are lanes opened up for the running backs to go through. That's why college football, or any football coach, says the game is won and lost in the trenches. The offensive line, A+. I was very impressed. And Penn State is in a much better position, honestly, after losing to Oregon than it was before. I'm not talking about the playoff path, in terms of what they have and what they're able to do to go up against better opponents. The offensive line playing at its best could not be a better possibility for Penn State.
Yeah, this is an offense that has to walk away from that game feeling really good about themselves, mm-hmm. after playing that well against a good Oregon team. I think also Drew Aller showed us a lot, but still a couple mistakes were made. What I've had some people question that late interception. It was second and short, second and one. I had no problem with the play call. You have to feel like, hey, I still got two more downs to get that 1 yard running the ball. Second down, I thought it was actually a really good call to see if you could get something over the top against Oregon. I don't question that call at all. How about you?
No, not at all. That's a routine football play. It's second and one. You are supposed to go for the home run. At the end of the day, Penn State just gets bad, unlucky breaks. Ohio State's defensive back in the red zone that makes a one-handed interception after the football goes through Trey Wallace's hands. This is no different than this play in the Big Ten Championship. Oregon's defensive back had inside leverage. That's where Trey Wallace was supposed to be. At the end of the day, Oregon's DB had great coverage and made an exceptional play on the ball. He turned his head around. That's an incomplete pass. We're not talking about it. And if Trey Wallace happens to make the catch or draw a pass interference, Andy Konalicki's a genius. James Franklin's a genius for taking that risk, for taking that gamble. But now we're talking about it as a bad play because Oregon's defensive back made a great play.
What it was a bad result. I thought the play call was excellent, what they should be doing. All right, that is it for quarter number one, Zach. When we come back, let's look forward. Let's talk about this playoff and the path the Nittany Lions have.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Sako. Just a reminder, with the Nittany Lions playoff path, it's now leading the Phoenix and the Fiesta Bowl. It's time to start planning your bowl game travel, not just this first round. We know there's a home game first, then they're off to Phoenix. How about anticipating the Nittany Lions even going beyond that? Collegiate Athletic Travel has you covered. They have air-inclusive packages featuring round-trip air transportations from Harrisburg, deluxe Scottsdale resort accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meals, entertainment events. They've got it all. And they've got their excellent staff always on hand to make your bowl game travels memorable and carefree. Those traveling to Phoenix on their own, well, you can still get in on the Lions playoff action by selecting a hotel-only package that excludes the air travel. Complete details and pricing That's going to become available later this week. In the meantime, visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for program updates, or you can call 814-238-4987. And if you've ever taken a trip with Collegiate Athletic Travel like I have, you know, it's a great way to travel. They take care of everything for you. All right, Zach, let's talk about this Nittany Lion path in the playoffs. On Sunday, we got the announcement where the seeding was. Penn State got a very favorable seed going in at 6. Were you surprised, Zach? I saw all kinds of predictions after the loss to Oregon where they would be. I saw 6th, 7th, 8th, even 9th, where they would be a road team in this first round. Were you concerned going into Sunday where the Penn State team was going to be seated?
Fairly, because I didn't know what the College Football Playoff Committee would do. It's not because I didn't think Penn State didn't earn it or shouldn't have been the 5 or the 6 seed. It had to do with the fact that in the past, teams were penalized for losing that championship game. And maybe it's because ESPN and the SEC and everybody's screaming that Alabama deserves to be in. And so maybe it's that constant barrage of that echo chamber that I am always seeing on my timelines and my feeds and in passing discussions that Penn State hasn't earned anything. And I have to constantly remind myself, no, they beat 10 Power 4 schools. They won those games. Notre Dame lost to the Group of 5 team. Alabama lost to Oklahoma, an abysmal team. Whereas if Penn State lost that way, if Penn State lost 24-3 against Minnesota, then I'd sit back and say, that's not a College Football Playoff team. But they found ways to win despite the circumstances. There is an anti-Penn State bias out there in the general public, in the national media sphere. You really have to find select people that are saying the same things we are outside of Penn State media, that this team belongs. So I was surprised from the fact that that Notre Dame wasn't moved up. They said it was close. They said it was very close that Notre Dame was right there ready to jump Penn State. But at the end of the day, it all works out.
Well, and I'm okay with saying that it was close. It's understandable.
Don't listen to Northern Illinois. That's the difference.
Exactly. And I look at it, I thought the committee, for as much as they were criticized, and I think you make the valid point, Zach, that we get that ESPN, who's the SEC network, essentially, just pushing and pushing. They're experts, I'm using air quotes here, are people like Nick Saban, former coach of Alabama. Paul Feinbaum, who's Alabama through and through. These guys are constantly lobbying for Alabama. And I found it very refreshing that I thought the committee actually did a great job. Now, that might mean they agreed with my assessment, but I thought they did a fantastic job. And the big debate was always SMU versus Alabama. And all those pro-Alabama people, all they would talk about, oh, the strength of their schedule, here's who they beat. They would never point out who they lost to, though, Zach.
And it's funny how that always works. It's funny how that always works. And I will say this. So ESPN, I don't know if that's actually true. They at least have the perception of being the biggest sports network in the entire country. Everyone thinks of ESPN. Nobody says, oh, Fox Sports. Right. So right. ESPN has the perception. So maybe they still tangibly are. I don't know. I'm not going to go look at internet ratings, TV ratings. I know they've lost viewership and listenership, but ESPN is top of mind. They are also married to the SEC conference and, for what it's worth, the College Football Playoff. That is their product. So I am not surprised that ESPN does this because they want their product. They have memos. They have other ulterior motives at play here. They need to put their product first. If the Big Ten was the SEC, if the Big Ten was ESPN's product, that was ESPN bought into the Big Ten, that was their TV deal, they would push Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, right? It has to do with the fact that they are married to the SEC. So think about this. it's for a lack of a better example, but it's kind of the same thing because I use the word marriage. If you're married to somebody and you constantly hype up this other person that's not your spouse, that's going to look weird, isn't it? Right? Yes. So that's what ESPN is doing. So everyone has to look at it through that lens that ESPN has a job to do. Those people are paid by that network to push a narrative. It is true. This isn't a conspiracy. This is legitimately what is going on. They are pushing a narrative because that's what they are paid to do to get more money. The more SEC teams that are playing in the postseason means that Anchor A and Field Reporter B all get pay raises. The network executives get bigger pay raises. Whereas Fox benefits because now Oregon. So that's what the College Football Playoff Committee is supposed to be. A neutral party. Not somebody that's devoted to Fox. Not somebody that's devoted to ESPN. And they did that. And that's where I am most proud of this situation.
And I'm impressed by that. And just the talk about ESPN, Zach, I wish that they would at least pretend to be journalists. Pretend to be, I'm a Penn State person, a Big Ten person by proxy then, but I can still say, top to bottom, I think the SEC is the best conference in the country. I think they are. But you're not judged by the conference you're in. You're judged as an individual team. And the fact is, Alabama, they still lost three games. And you can't hide that. You can't cover that up. If they had lost one game or two games, there's no doubt they would still be in the tournament. But they lost three. And I think, Clemson, they've lost three games, right? Now, they're in, but they won their conference. That's why they're in the tournament. Yeah. Alabama, guess what? Three losses. And they did not even get into their conference championship game, which also leads to the question, Zach, how much should the conference championship games count? Do you just totally ignore it? I think they have to count for something.
They do. But they do. You win and you're in the playoff, right? Oregon, the top four seeds are conference champions. So the conference championships I've went on a rant about it too, that the conference championships, they are not going anywhere. They have, if anything, they'll get expanded into a semifinal and a championship because there is so much money, the box suites, the concessions, the parking, the actual tickets that were bought by, and the eyeballs on the games. These were the only games on Saturday and everybody watched them. Everybody bought merchandise. Everybody bought tickets. So the conference championships are only going to get bigger. The playoff is only going to get bigger because dollars are at stake. There is more money to be had. There is more money to be made and manufactured. And that's what this all is. So the conference championships are not going anywhere. And they do mean something. You win it, you're in. You have a tangible outcome to get into the college football playoff. When all else fails, if you want to secure your spot, win your conference championship.
And by the way, they got an excellent weekend of football. The games were fantastic. They were great.
Well, because it was great on great, elite on elite. Yes. Yeah.
And I hope and I think the playoffs will continue that. Mm. Now, Zach, the controversy now, and I get this argument, Oregon, they won. They get the bye, so they get that reward. But going forward, one could argue that the number five and number six seed have an easier route through the playoffs. The fix to that, I've heard two different fixes. One is reseed after the first round. The other one is, yes, give the conference winners a entry into the tournament, but don't give them those top four seeds and the bye. What do you think?
That's what I would do. Option B, door number two. I've always had an issue with that. I didn't understand it at first and then had to get clarification on it. Why would Boise State, as the number 10 team in the country, be the three seed in the college football playoff, hypothetically, before any of this even happened? And now it's real. And Boise State, when they play Penn State, I'm not going to say if, because I think Penn State beats SMU. That is an awful matchup for the Mustangs, especially in Beaver Stadium in the heart of December. We'll talk about that more in a week's time, Jim. But Penn State is going to be a 10-point favorite against Boise State. They are the lone group of five team. I don't mind that a group of five team gets into the playoff. It's 12 teams, not four. I don't mind that at all. But Boise State should not be the three seed. Honestly, I think it should have been Penn State. It was whoever the top four were in the initial rankings. So I think Georgia was the two seed. And so Oregon, Georgia, and Penn State would have been the fourth seed. Penn State would have been the fourth overall seed in this case. That's the right way to go. I agree. If you win your conference championship, you are in. It's the same thing that I've said about the NFL. I think if you're the NFL and you win your division, you're in the playoff. But why should an 8-9 team get a home game over a team that's 13-4, but the team above you in your division happens to be 14-3? I think that's ludicrous.
I agree, and someone brought up a great point. If you look at the NCAA basketball tournament, you win your conference, you're in the tournament. You don't get a bye. You don't get an automatic high seed. All right, unfortunately, Zach, we are out of time. Thank you, Zach. Stick with us. We've got Sean Gold from Sean's Take coming up right after this break.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, it was conference championship game week. This is the time when the stars come out. Your big-time players, okay? They may have been playing week to week for 12 weeks, but now there's a championship at stake. This is where the stars come up big. And you, my friend, are a star. 5-0 with your picks last week. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And it was a good week. We'll get into how I almost wish I was 4-1 instead, but we'll save that for a couple minutes. But you know what? I'll take the 5-0. I had my fair share of down weeks, so I owed this week on the biggest stage to the listeners.
And I think this is coming off the 5-1 week last week, 10 of your last 11. You, my friend, are on fire.
Well, let's keep it going into bowl season now.
Let's do that. Let's start, though, taking a look at last week's games. And, Sean, first of all, there's a lot of talk that the conference championship games are unnecessary. And, by the way, I'm one of those people who thinks that way. But with that said, what a great weekend of football we had.
Yeah, it really was. And I completely agree. We could talk about how, you know, a lot of these games, are they really necessary for the new playoff structure? But man, this was one of the best weekends of college football that I've seen in a long time. So I love it.
And well, let's get through the games. Let's talk about them. The first one was Boise State, UNLV. Now, this is the Mountain West Conference where whoever seeded first, Boise State, they got to get this game on their home field, the Smurf turf, the blue turf, which is always fun. And it just takes a little while for the eyes to get used to it when you're watching it on TV. Boise State got out to an early lead. They won it 21-7. Really never in doubt. You and I both had Boise State winning this one. They were a 4-point favorite.
yeah, we kind of knew what to expect. We said Boise State was destined for the playoffs. And I think in this game, if you're a Boise State fan, you saw everything you wanted to see. You saw Ashton Gentry have another unbelievable performance in what may very well be a Heisman campaign. But more importantly, you saw the defense play well. And that's been kind of the issue with Boise State all year, is they're winning games, but they're all shootouts. They're all high scoring. And not that UNLV is, you know, going to be the offenses they're going to end up playing soon, but you got to be happy that you held UNLV in check this entire game. So you saw Ashton Gentry have a day, and you saw your defense look really good.
And Boise State might be relevant to Penn State fans. If Penn State can get past SMU, they would be facing Boise State. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But yep, Boise State won it. You and they covered the 4 points. You and I both had Boise State. Next up was Big 12, and this was the case. It was Arizona State and Iowa State. I'm not sure who people were thinking in the beginning of the year would be in this Big 12 game, but championship game. But nobody thought it would be Arizona State. They played well. They finished 10-2, as did Iowa State. Arizona State, a slim 2-point favorite in this one. You and I both had Arizona State, and boy, did they look good. And you they have a pretty good running back also.
Oh, yeah, and he made it known in the press conference that he believes he's the best running back in college football, and I think he really has an argument for it because you are playing tougher competition in the Big 12 all year than the Mountain West. Scataboo had a day on the ground, and I was nervous going into this game because this was supposed to be a very even matchup, and Arizona State just look dominant. I'm super excited to watch this team in the playoffs. I think they deserve to be there. And they're a scary team right now with the way they can run the ball. It's scary how powerful Scataboo is and how much they can just control a game through their run game.
And, you know, one of the things that this playoff does with 12 teams is it gives the opportunity for fans nationally to see some of these players. Now, most of us have heard of Ashton Gentry because he's a Heisman candidate, but I'm not sure many people have actually seen him play. Scataboo, by the way, for Arizona State, I'm not sure most fans nationally have even heard his name, let alone seen him play. But boy, what a dominating performance by him. And it did introduce him to a national audience. And I think now, and you know how TV networks do this, leading into that game, we are going to hear so much about him. And you know what? Good for him. And an Arizona State team that I don't know if they've been on the national stage all year. Now they will be. Good for them. And I think that's also good for the Big 12 and good for college football. So looking forward to that. Next up, the Southeast Conference game, Georgia versus Texas. I think most people thought this one would be a pretty evenly matched game. Although Georgia did beat Texas in Austin, it was the only loss on the year for Texas. Texas, though, in this one, they were a 2.5-point favorite. You took Georgia. I took Texas. I think this is one of those games, Sean, and maybe this is loser talk since I had Texas, but I think it's one of those picks. Boy, it really is a toss-up, and it turned into a toss-up game that went into overtime.
It 100% did. This was as even of a matchup as you could get. It had all the storylines with Carson Beck going down on a Hail Mary pass that maybe they shouldn't have even tried to throw before halftime, and the backup quarterback coming in, making some plays. My biggest takeaway here, if you're a Georgia fan, is that your defense looked really good. They shut Texas down on some times when Texas could have, you know, really taken command of this game. And their defense looked like the defense of Georgia a couple years ago, where they made timely plays. They were able to stop Texas's offense on third down enough times to force some punts. And I mean, if you're a Georgia fan, you're happy. If you're a Texas fan, you know you could have won this game too. So you're still feeling confident heading into the playoffs.
Yes. And what I thought was interesting, though, in watching the game, two tough physical teams, low-scoring game, but I didn't walk away saying, boy, those are the two best teams in the country, which in the last couple of years you'd often see Alabama, Georgia, say, in the Southeast Conference a championship game, and I would walk away saying, well, those are the two best teams in the country.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's hard to find who the best team in the country right now is. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't add a ton of confidence for anybody right now, especially after seeing Georgia and Texas kind of go head to head right there.
I think it's also interesting in the past years with the 4-team playoff, you never saw a team with two losses make the playoffs. Georgia, a two-loss Georgia, is the number two seed in this year. I think that is fascinating. All right, let's go with next up, Clemson-SMU. Fascinating game for the ACC championship. Clemson came into this game with three losses, SMU with one loss, SMU a slim favorite again by 2.5 points. Clemson ends up winning it. Crazy game. Clemson was blowing out SMU. SMU makes the great comeback, which probably saved their playoff life. And then Clemson with the miracle at last play, last drive, kickoff return, one completion, and they kick a long field goal to win it, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I was watching the Penn State game at the same time. And so at halftime, I kind of tuned out of the SMU-Clemson game because I thought, you know, okay, this is it. Clemson's going to the playoffs. SMU probably going to get blown out. Shakes up the whole entire playoff standings right there. Like, you may see Alabama in if SMU got blown out. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting the score notifications and it's a tie game. And I'm like, what in the world? And to see a college kicker hit a 56-yard field goal to win a game has to give you a ton of confidence in the program, because that's a tough kick in the NFL still. To make that in college really speaks volumes to that kicker. And for Clemson, that's got to be a lot of confidence knowing that game on the line, you have a kicker who can deliver. But also for Clemson, you got to know you got to put away a game, because in their next matchup, if they're up early, they got to hold on to that lead a whole lot better than they did in this game.
Oh, no doubt. All right. Finally, Penn State, Oregon, great game. You took the Oregon Ducks. I took Penn State, and it looked at first like an Oregon blowout, but Penn State not only made it competitive, they probably in a lot of ways outplayed Oregon as far as total yardage. Penn State had their opportunities, didn't turn out that way. Penn State lost 45-37. I'm getting dyslexic there. And Oregon, number one team in the country, but Penn State represented themselves pretty well and actually had a couple opportunities, Sean, that they let slip by.
They did. I think Penn State should have covered this. I think I should have been 4-1 on this week, because Penn State should have covered, if not won the game. And there's two instances too in this one. We know the fourth down or the second down interception at the end of the game. I don't mind the call. Take a shot. What I do mind though is that has not been Penn State's offense all year long. So with a downfield passing team, I like that call, but that has not been Penn State's play. Don't try to make it in that situation. Just do what's been working. And the second thing is, we learn this as a receiver a lot. When you're one-on-one in that situation, if you don't immediately beat the corner off the ball on your release, you're not getting the ball there. They did not win off the line of scrimmage in that release. Drew Auer should have thrown it away, should have checked it down. It was the worst possible outcome you could have right there. It is what it is. I'm still very happy. And Penn State should be very happy with how they played in this game, knowing that they can, one, beat an Ohio State team earlier in the year, and two, that they can beat Oregon.
And I was actually very good with the call, Sean. I think at 2nd-and-1, take your shot. But to your point, and I will put this on Drew Auer, who I thought, even if the stats don't show it, I thought he played very well. But you're right. And if he's not open, you got to throw that ball away. Live to fight. This wasn't 4th down. It was 2nd-and-1.
I completely agree. So, you know, learn from the mistakes. Penn State has a lot to look forward to. I'm disappointed they couldn't have won that game, but they're not in a bad spot at all. And they should have a ton of confidence right now.
And we're going to talk about this next segment. They actually ended up with a very, very nice seeding. And, you know, the thing of it is, a lot of people are all stunned and surprised by this. Oh, wow, you know, number 5 and 16 get a good draw. Well, guess what? We talked about this forever, and we'll talk about it again when we come back.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pregame meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Well, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number four of our show. We're talking about the upcoming playoffs. We've got a bit of a bye week going on here, Sean, so we're not going to make our official picks. But I did want to talk to you about how the seeding ended up, and it's really interesting. First of all, the top four seeds are Oregon number one, Georgia two, the winners of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. Then you had Boise State three, and then Arizona State four. And to understand how it works, it was the top four ranked conference winners get the buys and that those seeds from one to four. Boise State, Arizona State, they were not ranked that highly, but they still get those seeds. That seems to be the source of the controversy, Sean. I got a feeling they're going to change that rule and how they seed the teams.
I think they will in due time. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how does Arizona State play when they get their matchup between Clemson and Texas, and how does Boise State perform against either Penn State or SMU? I really don't have a problem with Arizona State having a bye. I think the Big 12 was underrated this year. I mean, that was not an easy schedule. We know Big 12 teams, you know, are pretty solid. Boise State, though, being number three, I do have a little bit of an issue with that when you just take strength of schedule into consideration. You know, for a team that got a bye, I don't know why they're not fourth. And I get they were, you know, a better record than Arizona State, but strength of schedule has to mean something a bit more. And I think that is a change that will eventually, you know, come into effect.
I think it will also, because if you just go by how the playoff committee ranked the teams, not seeded, but how they ranked them, both Arizona State and Boise State are much further down in the rankings. So if you decided they were good enough to get to that point, fine. But that really wasn't the case in how the committee felt about them. It was just the rules. And I suspect it'll change. Like somebody put it to me that they're winning their conference. That earns them a playoff berth. That should be enough of a reward to also give them the bye with that seeding. That's too much. And what it does also, the other repercussions to this is, if you are the 5 or 6 seed, which this year will be Texas and Penn State, it helps you. If you win that first round game, it gives you a better second round game playing. I hate to use the word inferior when talking about it, because these are playoff teams, but they're not as highly regarded, Boise State and Arizona State. Whereas Georgia, they'll have to play the winner of Notre Dame, Indiana, and Oregon, the number one team in the country. Their reward for getting that bye is a first-round game against either Tennessee or Ohio State. Look, bringing it to Penn State, there's a lot of people who feel like Penn State lost to Oregon and got the better seeding than Oregon did.
Yeah, and it's funny because I would completely agree with that. If, you know, if Penn State can get past SMU, I'd much rather take on Boise State than how Oregon's going to get either Tennessee or Ohio State, who are phenomenal programs and would both probably be favored over Boise State in a game if they played head-to-head. So it is interesting how this seeding worked out. And I think there are, you know, maybe some changes that should be made in the future for this.
I think that change will be made. And the other interesting point is this is now a tournament. It's not a 64 or 68 team tournament like basketball is. However, with that said, in basketball, you win your conference, you get an automatic berth. You don't get an automatic high seeding for that, Sean.
And it is interesting that this is the only format where you do get the high seeding for that. Because you're right, you could go and win. Yale won the Ivy League last year for March Madness. They're not a number one seed in the tournament. They shouldn't have been, you know. So it is.
Oh, come on, Sean. They were robbed. They should have gotten a number one seed.
So it's really interesting how in football it is. You get a higher seed for winning an inferior conference. And that's something that will change, I think.
I think when this was set up, there was also the Pac-12 was involved. And I think the feeling was it would be a Big Ten, Southeast Conference winner, ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, four of those five. And they would be elite teams, more highly regarded. But then you had so many teams like Oregon, USC, Texas, Oklahoma, going to the Big Ten in the Southeast Conference, it really skewed those conferences. Because if you think back, this would have been, without the change in conferences, you would have had an Oregon from the Pac-12, you would have had a Texas from the Big 12, and then a team from the Big Ten and a team from the Southeast Conference. It would have looked very different.
That's a great point on this. I didn't go back to think that the Pac-12 was in these conversations on how this would be formatted. And obviously Pac-12, not really a thing anymore. So that does make changes. And I think it also gives a good reason to keep the door open to future changes on this, because it's been a crazy past 2 years really in just college football structure.
In the time we have left, Sean, how about we take a look at the upcoming games? We're not going to make our picks, but let's take a look at what we will be choosing next week. The four games where the four higher seeds have the home game start with number 5. Texas takes on Clemson. Texas, a huge favorite over Clemson. That's 11 points, Sean.
It's going to be really interesting to see, not just for this game, but for all the games, how much these lines move, because you're giving, you know, bettors and the money 2 weeks to kind of make their adjustments. But I think it's justified on why this spread is that big. I know I don't want to be playing Texas in the first round right now after an overtime loss to Georgia. They're not going to be happy about that. And Clemson, you know, they've had weeks where they look really good. They've had weeks where they don't look like a playoff team. So I think Texas is going to be, you know, a very tough out. We'll see what the spread is, you know, in due time. But I understand the line being set, you know, as a double digit favorite so far.
And again, it's Texas will be the home team for it. So that plays a part in these spreads. Next up, number 6, Penn State against SMU. And you know what, Sean? I've already seen 8.5 points, then 7.5 points, and I've seen 9 points, okay? So this one seems to be bouncing around a bit. We'll see where it is next week. But it's Penn State at home against the warm weather team in SMU.
Yeah, really happy this game is in Happy Valley. And SMU is a great team. They put up points like some of the best teams in the country. So it's going to be a good matchup. I think the home field gives Penn State a ton in this game, though. It's a hard environment to play in. And, man, I would love to be at Beaver Stadium for the first ever Penn State College football playoff hosting game. That stadium is going to be jumping like no other.
I think it will also. And from the very start, when they announced that there would be home games with this 12-team playoffs, and first of all, I love the 12-team playoff. Absolutely love it. Think it's the best thing they ever have done. The second best thing is having home games. Candidly, I wish they would do that for 2 rounds. I think the second round should also be a home game. But yeah, and it'll be interesting to see when you have a matchup like SMU, Penn State in the cold weather, will it be, you know, a grinded out kind of game that Penn State would want to play? The way they ran the ball against Oregon, I'm sure they would love to do the same thing against SMU. We don't know if we're going to get cold. We don't know if we're going to get wind. We don't know if we're going to get snow. That's the case. it will make the game very interesting for a team coming from the South. Next up, let's see, where are we? 5-6. Let's go with Notre Dame hosting Indiana. That's an interesting matchup in the same state. Indiana is not going to have a problem with colder weather coming from Indiana. I think that's an interesting match. Notre Dame is an 8-point favorite. I'm not sure Indiana isn't being undersold in this one, Sean.
I completely agree. My initial take on this would be that that's some great value for Indiana right there. And, you know, I'm still under the impression that that Ohio State showing was looked as bad as it was because of a lot of big mistakes that they made in that game. I think they clean up their game plan. And I also think we got to talk about how, who did Notre Dame beat this season besides Texas A&M in week one? And Texas A&M, not a team we're talking about today. Why? Because they didn't win enough games to get in this situation. So, you know, Notre Dame's next biggest win is probably USC, who was barely bowl eligible this year. I think Notre Dame's a bit overrated, and I think Indiana is a real sleeper team right now.
I do too, and you brought up that Ohio State game. I think if you just look at the final score of that game, you get a certain impression of the game that's not entirely accurate. Indiana came out of the shoot sharp, marching down the field, showed they could move the ball against that Ohio State defense. I know they got shut down after that, but I think they're being undersold here a little bit. Speaking of the Buckeyes, this is another situation where a team from the South is coming up to Columbus to Ohio State, and it's also Big Ten versus Southeast Conference, Ohio State versus Tennessee. And Sean, I just don't know what you're going to get from Ohio State after that loss to Michigan. Are they going to come out primed and ready, or are they going to come out like a beaten team?
I would guess they're going to come out primed and ready for this game. I think there's a lot of motivation they have here, and they're probably looking at Oregon next, knowing that they were a couple plays away from beating Oregon and perhaps carrying that momentum into being the number one seed in this entire playoff thing. That's the line we have with Ohio State right now. Are they the eighth team, or are they still good enough to be the best team? And I don't know what we're going to get from Tennessee. Tennessee's offense started the season hot, and it since has switched. Their defense has been better than their offense, but this was once an offensive football team. So I'm very intrigued about this matchup, and I don't know what I'm going to think about it in a couple weeks.
I know it's a hard one to call. Is Ohio State still the Ohio State we thought they were? And what a fascinating story, Sean, that of redemption this could be for Ohio State. They get past Tennessee, then they have Oregon. Isn't that fascinating?
It is. I'm excited to see how it plays out. That's going to be a really fun part of the bracket to watch. And I'm also glad Penn State doesn't have to have that part of the bracket.
I am too, Sean. All right, that's going to have to be the last word. A lot of interesting games coming up. We got a week and a half, though, to think about it. The spreads have a week and a half to settle in. Next week when we come back, we'll see if Sean stays as hot as he has been with his picks. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
With the postseason now coming into focus, excitement is building for a Nittany Lion appearance in the college football playoffs. Now's the time to start thinking of how to make your travel arrangements should the team advance to the playoffs to be held at four major bowl destinations over the New Year's holiday: LA, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Get in on all the playoff action with an all-inclusive bowl game travel package brought to you by State College-based Collegiate Athletic Travel, a national leader in sports fan travel for over 50 years. CAT's air-inclusive packages feature round-trip charter, air transportation from select Pennsylvania cities, deluxe hotel accommodations, airport and game transfers, pre-game meal and entertainment events, as well as game tickets, all under the supervision of CAT's seasoned event staff. Traveling on your own can still get in on the playoff action by selecting a land-only package that includes all features exclusive of air travel. Visit athletictravel.com in the coming days for complete details.